And it gives me great pleasure to introduce John W. from Orchid.
My name's John, and I am an alcoholic. I'd like to start off with some step 11, because I love praying, so if everybody would you just bow your heads and thank you, Father, for everything. Everything we have belongs to you, Lord. I can't change what happened in the past, and I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but thank you for right now. May you bless everyone in this room and all those who have come before and will find these doors and these rooms later. Without your love and guidance, we are all lost and spiritually dead. We love you and praise you in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. So my sobriety date is January 5th, 2025. So I have a little over a year. I did not wake up that, I think it was a Sunday. I did not wake up that Sunday morning wanting to quit drinking, but I ate some bad sushi the night before, and I could not keep a drink down. So I was very ill, and so I had food poisoning. I'm not going to tell you where I ate that sushi at. That would be no good. I have a sponsor, Jim L. He's right there. I have a home group. It's called the Goes Denny Lee group, and I am the secretary of the Factory Men's Stag meeting on Wednesday nights at 6:30, which is my home meeting. I tell you all this because at the top of chapter 5 in the big book, it says, rarely do we see somebody fail who thoroughly follows our path. And I never did that. That's why I failed every time. So when I called Jim and I said, man, what do I do? You know, this is the last, bus stop. And what do I do? So I'm just doing everything that he tells me to do and just following his lead. I used to absolutely despise saying that I'm an alcoholic. I thought it was just stupid. And I hated keeping a sobriety date. Never did. I have one now. It's in my phone, actually. Getting sober this time, there's a lot more we have access to. And the iPhone, when I first got sober, I was like, oh, well, geez, I'm smart. I'm going to create an app that, will help everybody in AA. Oh, dummy, it's right there, So I downloaded it, you put your date in, and it keeps track of everything, and plus it has the daily readings, the daily reflections. I absolutely love it. It always hits me. Almost every reading, it feels like it's directed at me. Like I said before, I used to hate saying I was an alcoholic. I really enjoy it. It's hope, because I understand now. I never understood before why I drank so much and why I just couldn't stop under my own willpower. So now I'm proud of it, honestly. I was introduced to AA a long time ago, but I was too good for AA. So I looked at all the differences. You guys are crazy. I was comparing myself to everybody. So I tried church, multiple rehabs, multiple detoxes, more church. If I could just get enough God, sitting on my hands, not doing anything, just staying sober, hypnosis, which I highly recommend, actually. It's actually really wonderful, but it wasn't the 12 steps, it was very relaxing. Psychiatrists, psychologists. I only tried one psychiatrist because he was crazier than I was. No, really, he was. Abstinence, hundreds of internet searches looking for the latest snake oil that I could take that would help me to either drink normally or just stop and not have to come to these meetings and, talk to everybody and listen to everybody's stories and everything. Just on and on and on. This simple program, oddly enough, the simple program that was that I was introduced to many years ago, you know, that I never listened to, you know, it's really all I needed. I never believed it was a progressive disease, but looking back over the decades that I drank, you know, I just progressed. And every time I quit and I would start right where I left off, and then it would just get worse and worse and worse. I hated calling it a disease. I thought that was weak. I didn't believe it. I don't know if science has really proved that it's a disease, but it doesn't matter to me because I feel like it's a disease. I mean, I always used to say, you know, oh, well, you know, cancer is a disease, you know. But no, this is a disease, and I firmly believe that today. I used to always think that I had a choice, you know, and my choice was just I just wanted to drink and use, you know. But I, now looking back, I really didn't have a choice. It just wasn't. Once I had one drink, it was on, and I could not choose to just stop. I was always looking at the differences in rather than the similarities, you know, and that's why I was just miserable, and I didn't want to go to meetings, you know. I was born and raised here in Santa Maria. I had great parents. I think I came out smelling like Chardonnay and Benson and Hedges 100s. My mom... I just remember the Benson and Hedges 100s, you know. So my mom was a great mom. She was not an alcoholic by my standards. There was times growing up that, you know, like, oh, man, maybe mom does drink too much. But, man, she was just such a great mom. She loved her Chardonnay. She loved her cigarettes. She put the cigarettes down once I got into high school, and she just quit. Just cold turkey, just quit. It was amazing. But, you know, she would have her two glasses a night. Sometimes on the weekends, it'd get a little bit more, you know. But I never saw her, like, out of control crazy, you know. So, and she was always there. Just a great mom. My mom and dad got divorced when I was very young. I don't really remember a lot about it. I never really asked because, you know, in the 70s, you don't really talk about stuff like that. There was no, at least not in our family. We just swept everything under the rug and just kept on trudging along. So... my dad, he moved to Cambria. He had dreams of building houses up there. He's a great guy. My mom did not want to go to Cambria for whatever reason, so she stayed here in Santa Maria. I have two older brothers. One is in the program, Jim. A lot of you guys know Jim. Our brother David, he didn't quite measure up to us, so he just decided one day to quit drinking because he didn't like the hangovers. And I said, well, there's a cure for hangovers, you know. Take a rip and drink. You know, and that all goes away. So, but he just didn't want to do it. So, my grandparents. So, here's where I can really relate to, because my mom's dad was a raging alcoholic, and he died. I don't know. He was in his 70s, but man, he really beat himself up. And I really don't remember a lot about him other than he would. He did his business good. He you know, he made a living. He did a lot of stuff, but my gosh, he'd get to work really early and then he'd start drinking about one and then he'd pass out on the couch. And my mom used to just say it was just horrific. So I think that's probably part of the reason why she, you know, wanted a better life for us and everything. You know, he would run off and get cleaned up and go to a spa or something like that and hot tub. And I would kind of do the same thing, you know? So, I was a lot like him. He ended up dying, I think, of cirrhosis of the liver or lung cancer or something like that. My dad's dad, he was cool. My other grandpa, he just ate too much and he ended up with a congestive heart failure. He really liked salt and cigarettes. So, I never really remember him being drunk. My dad was not a drunk. He would like drink for a year and then he'd take a year off and then drink for a year and take a year off. You know, he was very disciplined. So, I don't know. My brother and I, we just decided to get after it. When my mom and dad, they divorced, our middle brother, David, he went to live in Cambria with him. So we would go back and forth to Cambria and visit him. I think we went monthly. And it was just kind of it was fun. I mean, it was good. For some reason, I ended up with a stuttering problem. I don't know what the heck that was all about. Maybe that's something that I got to do a deep dive into. Not. But, you know, so I stuttered. Big deal. My So I do. Okay, so my mom met my stepdad. I guess when I was maybe 4 or 5 or 6 or something like that. He was a great guy. They ended up getting married when I was 7. I moved around to a lot of schools though. We started off, we were in St. Patrick's in Oro Grande, and then I moved down. Or I was at St. Mary's first, and then St. Patrick's, and then we moved down to Santa Maria, and I went to St. Louis to Montfort. So we kind of moved around a lot and stuff. So I went to a lot of different schools. I ended up in 5th grade getting bullied, and this was a pretty big deal. They had this group called the World Against Westerner, WA. And yeah, it was crazy. And I was a puny guy. I hadn't gotten bigger yet. And I just wasn't very aggressive or anything. So I got bullied, you know. And what does every good mother do, you know, when you get bullied? She comes in and gets her son out and go to another school. So she yanked me out of Catholic school. We went down to May Grisham and Orchid. And I started to grow. And I think some of the kids, like, they kind of heard that I got bullied at the other school, so they tried to start bullying me, you know, and I absolutely beat the living shit out of a kid. And I don't know where that came from. I was probably watching freaking Kung Fu or something like that. And anyway, nobody ever messed with me again. I started playing football. Oddly enough, started playing football. The kid who started the bullying against me was on my football team. In practice, I absolutely laid him out. And so nobody really ever messed with me. We ended up actually becoming very good friends. And later on in life, he apologized to me. So it's all good, you know. 7th grade. This is the first time I ever drank a beer. And I'll never forget it. We were over at some friend's house partying. My parents were. And we were playing football on the street. And it's like, oh, yeah, thirsty, you know. So we go in their garage, open up the garage. And I'll never forget, it's just stacked with Budweisers. There's no sodas for kids or anything like that. And I'm like, well, what the hell, you know. So I cracked that sucker open and guzzled it down. It was so freaking good. I can still taste it today. So it was really good. But that was it. I didn't drink 12 of them in a row, you know, or anything. After that, made it through 7th and 8th grade, you know, fine. High school started, and that's when the partying really started. Something pretty funny. I went to St. Joseph High School, and in 9th grade, they do a thing called Slave Day, where seniors get you as a freshman slave, and you got to do whatever they say. So this was the last year they did it to where you could spend the night at the senior's house. So a bunch of us freshmen, we all stayed at somebody's house downtown, and we got absolutely torched. I mean, we got drunker than drunk for the first time. And I said, man, that's a lot of fun. The funniest part was getting up in the morning, and they had women's clothes laid out, you know, just bras and panties. And I'm like, okay, what's all this for? And I go, well, you guys are going to put them on, and then we're driving to Santa Maria High School right here. And you're going to run through Santa Maria High. So that's what we did. Yeah. Ran through Santa Maria High, right from Broadway all the way through to the back in ladies' underwear. I think I had a thong on, too. It was awesome. So needless to say, that did not, that was done, I think. Jim, you went there after me.
Yeah, no, they didn't do that.
Yeah, done. So... Anyway, that started off my drinking career. I was very into sports, though, so I wasn't drinking daily. It was just on the weekends, you know, and because I was really into sports. But the weekends, when they came around, man, we got after it and just drank and drove and just, you name it, just crazy stuff. Avila Beach, you know, driving back with one eye on, you know, just can't see the road. No drugs, though, in high school. Maybe I just missed them. I don't know. I think they were there, but, you know, but that was the start of the drinking career. One really good drunk, and I kind of have I have rules for my drinking. So I would only drink beer unless the beer ran out, and then I would drink whatever else is there. But most of the time I had a lot of beer. So, but one time in high school, my buddy and I, he's like, hey, let's go fishing at Kachuma, Lake Kachuma, you know? I'm like, okay, what the hell? So, We drive down there. He pulls out a 5th of Bacardi. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, what are we going to do with that? You know, he's like, well, I'll sit on the shore here and see if we can catch some fish and catch a buzz. So we ended up drinking, splitting that bottle half and half. He starts puking everywhere. I'm driving. I feel fine, you know? So I get in the car, Highway 154 in the truck, you know, and he's throwing up all out the side. I can still picture it today. And I'm just driving home, you know, it's no problem. My little S10, Chevy S10. That was probably a hint of, you know, probably pretty good at drinking or not good at drinking or whatever you want to call it, you know? Man, that was just crazy. I didn't really get in any trouble in high school. My brother, he blazed an absolute path of destruction in front of me. So I knew what not to do to not get caught. And so I hit it pretty good, or my parents just ignored it. You know, I don't know. I didn't get in any trouble, though. So I was the golden child. So college, I ended up playing baseball in Hancock. You know, I was okay at baseball, but God, I really liked drinking a lot. So baseball was just not a priority. I ended up quitting baseball my freshman year, and I had a great job at Great Scott's Pizza. You know, I was making like freaking $300 a month or something, and I got all the beer I could drink in there. I probably needed to make an amends to him. I would deliver beers to my buddies, you know, with pizzas and everything like that, and God, we just had a blast. Anyway, so I had to figure out what the heck to do after Hancock. So I ended up going to like 5 different colleges or something like that. But we all moved to Fresno, some buddies of mine. And we had a blast over there, you know. Trips to Reno, just drinking. Everything was about drinking. It was just no drugs yet. Everything was about drinking, though. I ended up, you know, I had to get my crap together. So I ended up coming back to Cal Poly to finish school because I just could not focus at Fresno State. So at Cal Poly, I, you know, continued drinking, but it was more of like kind of on my own. So like I would go down, I went down one night, there was a laundromat and there was a bar right next door. So you could do your laundry and drink. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I picked up my one and only DUI, was going home from the laundromat. Went across Madonna Bridge speeding. He pulled me over and I blew a .23, you know, which I don't know, it's okay. He was kind of amazed that I was even like talking right and walking right, and I was like, I feel fine, you know. And he's like, well, you're going to jail, you know. I guess nowadays they give you a ticket. Back then they take you to jail. So that was my one and only time. Oh no, I got a drunk in public once and went to jail too, but whatever. So went to jail, did that. Had to go to 10 AA classes because I, you know, blew a .23. So I went to them. I didn't pay any attention. Nothing stuck, obviously. You know, I wasn't ready to quit. That's the bottom line. I graduated from Cal Poly, oddly enough. It was really, you know, at school now it's hard, but then it was pretty easy. So in between there, met a girl that I went to high school with, had a kid. We got, right after I graduated, we got married. That lasted 9 months. Neither one of us were ready for that, and it just wasn't the right fit. But so, you know, what are you going to do? But I did get a great daughter out of it. She's 30 years old. She lives here in town, has a great job, is doing well. So this is where it just kind of gets a little bit just kind of all over the place. I'm, you know, I have times of sobriety. After I graduated Cal Poly, I went to work for my family business in farming. And I would have bouts of sobriety. After I got divorced, you know, I had to get my stuff together, you know, and everything and be a good dad. And I really tried to focus on that. And I think I did a pretty good job with it, you know. I didn't want to, you know, let her down. So I pulled myself together and just sat on my hands and I didn't drink. I can't remember if I was miserable without it. I don't think I was, but, you know, I still was suffering from untreated alcoholism. In my 30s, okay. 30s, I met Janine, my wife, of 23 years. 22. we met on a, she worked at the bank, I worked at the farm, so we met on a ranch ride. It was beautiful. Little did she know, you know, how mentally screwed up I was. I was sober at the time, though, when I met her. So I acted like I had my, you know, my stuff together and everything like that. And I did. I felt, you know, I was pretty good. I was not drinking. And I honestly, I don't know. I can't remember. And I didn't ask her today when I actually started drinking. But we got married in June 28th of 2003. And I think I started drinking again, kind of slowly, you know, like you do. You just kind of dive into it a little bit and taste it. Sometime after that or sometime before that. But anyway, the point is that I started again. This on and off relationship with alcohol. So after a few years, we ended up having two kids. Our son, who's 19, Aiden, and Grace, who's 15. They're great kids. I did my first rehab at Cottage when Aiden was 1 year old. Obviously, Grace was not born yet. I wanted to get sober, but I really didn't want to. I was kind of doing it to please the family, to please the family business, you know, and just keep the peace. So I, you know, we went to a lot of meetings down there, obviously. Probably a lot of people in here have done the same thing. Nothing sticked. I didn't get a sponsor when I got back. I didn't go to meetings. You know, it's just a constant of just not working the program, you know, not doing the top of the first sentence in chapter five, you know. So after that, I forget how long before I started drinking again, but Janine moved out, took the kids, got an apartment, you know. I wallowed in my own self-pity for a while. And then ended up, internet search, you know, like always, found a rehab in Colorado that was all Christian based. And I said, let me try that. You know, so I got on a plane, went to Colorado, spent 4 months there, took a, you know, a break from work, which nobody was happy about. I don't blame them looking back on it. It's freaking stupid. You know, I felt good about it. I came back and I was sober for quite a while, and it was good. So I really don't know how it happened that I relapsed again, other than, you know, this program of just staying connected is just so important. So that's more than likely what happened. So my 40s, everything's progressing. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. This is really the bottom. So I think I was about 42. I was basically fired from my own company. I was voted out by my brother and my stepdad. I don't blame them a bit. At the time, though, I was pissed. It was bad. Looking back, it was absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me. Here's the part that I laugh about now. When I did my fourth step with Jim, I didn't even realize I was doing this. I got voted out in 2015. I lied up until I did my fourth step last year about not being voted out. I said I retired, you know. I was on the country club board and I was playing golf and, you know, just, I'm just going to retire and let my legs get tan and, you know, do all that stuff. So, you know, I lived that lie. And when you live it so long, you just believe it after a while. So I told that over, and everybody probably knew anyway that that wasn't the truth. They knew I was a friggin' train wreck. So, you know, but to do that fourth step and write that last column about your part in it, it was just like, when I spoke about it with Jim, it was just like, wow, that's really amazing that I told that. It was such a freeing experience. So I guess I just encourage everybody, if you haven't done the steps or you're stuck on one, just do them. You can always go back and do them again. So that was a big, big turning point for me. It was my bottom. And I can't say that I got sober right away because I had to wallow in my own self-pity for, I think, a couple years. Until 2016, and then everything started to hit the fan again. You know, family was mad, you know. I didn't have to worry about the family business anymore, and that was done. The family, you know, it was a struggle. So 2016, I said, you know what? I'm going to stop. Yep, and I did. I stopped. And we have a really good, you know, church life we do, and I got really involved in church, which was good. My mom, she got sick in there. She got a tumor in her spine, ended up paralyzed. So between 2016 and 2020, I walked with her through her whole medical issues and everything like that. She ended up dying in 2016. And this was a big spiritual moment for me because I had never been next to somebody's side who actually took their last breath. And it was absolutely an absolute amazing experience. Everybody was gathered around. I felt, when my mom took her last breath, I absolutely felt her soul leave her body and move upward. I could almost see it. It's making me shake right now. It was so absolutely incredible. And I had absolutely zero, I was not connected to her body anymore. I didn't care about her body. It was just a really, really weird and trippy experience that I'll never forget. And it changed my whole outlook on what happens when we die. I always believed in God, but I never really had a deep understanding of it. And so there, if you're struggling with God and you have a chance to, you know, be by somebody's side when they're dying, just go and just take it all in, you know. And if I was drinking or using, it absolutely would not have happened. Those doors would have been closed. God would not have opened up that door for me to see. So even though I wasn't working a program, I was sober. I was, and I was in a good spot. So COVID, yeah. That's a great thing, yeah. So COVID hits in 2020. I got COVID when I was sober. We all did. And I don't know, a few months went by afterwards, and I just started having this body pain, body ache. I was miserable. And I guess it was some kind of long COVID thing or something like that. I woke up one morning shaking, just uncontrollably. Could not stop. Thought I was cold. No, that wasn't it. Completely stone sober. It's about 6 in the morning. I couldn't stop, and it went on for literally 4 days. So after like day 2 or whatever it was, I said, you know what? I know what can help this. I am my own best doctor, and I will fix this. For some reason, we had beer in the house, you know, because we'd have parties and stuff, and I have tons of alcohol in the house now. It doesn't bother me, but I found some beer outside, and I just started crushing them. And the shaking got a little bit better, but, you know, I think I had like 4 beers, and then I called my doctor because I have a cell phone number, and he says, well, let me get you in. So I go in, he gives me some pills or something. He goes, it's going to take 2 weeks to kick in probably once you get in your system, you know, and you just, it sounds like you have some kind of nerve damage or something like that. So I started taking the pills, but I started sneaking drinks, you know, daily. And I think I had some non-alcoholic beers out there. So I was doing a little concoction, you know, a little non-alcoholic, a little alcoholic, non-alcoholic, you know, yeah, okay, back and forth. So anyway, off I go on a 4-year bender, and stopped. I didn't stop drinking, but I just would drink like maybe only 12 and then, you know, just on and on and on. After a while, my legs started swelling. I knew that something wasn't going right. So fade off into the sunset and die. You know, the swelling in my legs went down. I started to, you know, look a little healthier or whatever, you know, but I was still drinking. I was probably drinking 12 to 18 beers a day. I've always loved working out at the Y, even drinking, but I still play basketball to this day, you know, 5 days a week, and I would go and play basketball. And the progressiveness of this disease, is I would have an ice chest in my truck in the back seat. I would go get to the gym about 6 a.m., go in the sauna and sweat, and then play a few games of basketball, and then immediately leave, get in my truck, and slam down 3 beers on the way home. Mm-hmm. I'd get home, hit the jacuzzi, make some coffee, put a little bit of whiskey, a little bit of, you know, Bailey's in the coffee, and then start drinking and drink all day. 12 to 18 beers a day, you know. So it was just horrible. I did that up until the time that I ate the bad sushi, which was a little over a year ago. And, you know, here we are. So when I got sober January 5th of 2025, I waited about a month. Because I didn't want to, like, rush in here, you know, and be, like, so desperate or whatever. So I want to get my crap together, you know, and look pretty good and look presentable for everybody, you know. I'm just kidding. I don't know why. I just sat on my hands because I'm stubborn. I ended up calling Jim, you know, and saying, okay, dude, what do I do? We've been talking on and off for about 3 years. So, you know, it was in my mind, but I just didn't want to do it. So we got right into action, you know. I used to struggle with God's will for my life. And I would, like, think all these grandiose things of God wants me to do all these things. And it would drive me crazy. I'd be like, yeah, but I'm a drunk. And I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, you know. And something that came to me, though, is, you know, God's will is very simple for me now. Love God, love people, and tell the truth. It's just so healthy, and not just love anybody, love everybody, you know, and that's the hardest part. Not just the people that love me, but just absolutely love everybody and try to help them. So, I love acceptance on the page of 417. We talk about it a lot. Marcus and I went on vacation last year. We read it every day. I try to read it at least once a week, if not more. I know that I have an allergy to alcohol, and when I drink, the phenomenon of craving kicks in, and I cannot stop. I have a commitment. I like to pray Isaiah 6:8 as much as I can. Here I am, Lord, use me. I love that. That's an old Charlie Kirk prayer. I don't try to swim upstream anymore. I used to try to, you know, stuff a square peg into a round hole constantly. It was just brutal. I have zero expectations. This is a big deal for me. I go into any situation and just try to have zero expectations of an outcome. That way it sounds like kind of negative, but it's really not for me. It's just like, I just don't, if I'm neutral in a situation, if it goes good, that's fine. If it goes bad, that's fine. I don't have to, like, cop a resentment over it and get all pissed. I'm just going to close with this. I want to close with a text that my sponsor sent me. It's pretty funny. It's actually pretty funny about the progressiveness and how stupid I am. So on September of 2024, this is 3 months prior to me getting sober, Jim had been, like, texting me and stuff, just little things, not bugging the crap out of me, but just texting me. And he said, hey, how's it going? And this is 3 months before I get sober. I was right in the middle of it, you know. And I said, going pretty good. That's a lie. I don't know why I said this. I said, asking for help is easy for me. I like the big book and the steps. Funny. I never read them. I never read the big book or worked the steps. So I don't know where that came from. I just really don't like hearing everyone calling themselves an alcoholic and listening to stories about drinking. It's always all about me, right? I know it helps a lot of people, but my mind doesn't work that way. Really? Tell me how your mind does work, John. Just being very honest with you. No, I'm not. I am a glass full guy. I don't look at the negative ever. I just did that. Are the meetings still that way? ? Please don't take this as a put down. I know the program has helped millions of people. God, what an idiot. So Jim's response is, you will find whatever you are looking for at the meetings. It's all your perspective. In the beginning, people don't go to AA because they want to. They go because nothing else has worked. Eventually, your perspective will start to shift. And then you want to go to meetings because there are people there you can help. I'm pretty sure I could stay sober without AA, but how happy would I be? The key to long-term sobriety is finding true happiness and serenity. Otherwise, you will always feel like you're missing something. You find this by working the steps and helping others. Seems simple enough. Too many people have preconceived notions of what really giving it a chance is. They go in with an attitude similar to yours, and that's exactly what they find, and never come back. You are the only one who can identify yourself as an alcoholic. That means you don't have to do this. You just simply say your name. For me, AA has completely changed my life and is the best decision I have ever made. But it took some time before I could see that. I would be happy to help in any way I can, but also understand your concerns. Call me anytime, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Good job, Jim.
That's all I got.
All right, let's give John another round of applause. Thank you, John, for speaking tonight. Anybody who would like to come up after the meeting to thank the speaker is more than welcome.